Newsweek presents The Debate with Andrew Tolman.
Everything 100% of the time, 24 hours a day, is a negotiation.
Ellis Hennigan.
None of us have fallen for the notion that this is conservative.
Amani Wells Onyoha.
I'm completely fed up with whether it's politicized or not.
And Jeff Charles.
That distracts us from actually rolling up our sleeves.
The Debate starts now.
So John Fetterman is sticking with the hoodie. You know, Senator Fetterman from Pennsylvania, as you know, got elected in gym shorts, sneakers, and a hoodie. And damned if he's not serving in the Senate that way. It has, as you may have heard, ruffled a few feathers in the world's greatest deliberative body, where, you know, people normally wear a suit, at least when they're on the Senate floor. I guess it's not a written rule anywhere. There's no law that says you have to, but centuries of Senate tradition suggest that senators dress with a certain appropriateness. It's gotten the reactions that you'd expect. I mean, some people are offended. They say standards are falling. Others are saying, hey, come on, it's the 21st century. That's how people dress today. But I have been fascinated by this story because it has really spawned a whole bunch of actual thoughtful issues inside a political contretemps. And I always gravitate to those things when they happen. A quick rundown, and then, I'd love to hear what you guys think about this thing. It raises to me a whole bunch of questions about, what does it mean to dress up today? Have the rules changed on how it is we present ourselves to the world? What did COVID do? How do you slobs dress? I want to hear some reports on that as well. But the New York Post
people, that could be anything, right?
I'm a little concerned about some of my co-hosts here.
I'm concerned that you use the word contretemps.
I know, and correctly pronounced in all. Look at us, bilingual.
I am from Louisiana. So, the New York Post sent out a reporter dressed exactly in the Fetterman duds to fancy restaurants in New York, where he was immediately turned away. At Daniel, where the 7-course tasting menu goes for $2.75, they said no athletic attire allowed here. Got about the same bum brush treatment at Le Bernardin and Jean George. So what do you guys make of this? Are you pulling for the sloppy senator? Are you feeling like everybody just needs to chill out?
As a fashionista. And somebody who reads a lot of
the nicest
magazines.
Looking of all of us easily. Go ahead.
Thank you guys. To me, I have mixed thoughts, but my first thought is just coming from, I'm going to take politics out of it and just think aesthetics only. Okay. It just don't look good, you know? And that's really my honest opinion. Like, I get it. That's how you want to run your errands. Do you, boo? You know, we all have our errand outfits and all of that, but not even to be classist or anything. It's just not giving professional attire. I don't know. I personally wouldn't wear it on the Senate floor. I don't see why he's so hell bent on continuing to dress like that. Like, is he gaining something from it? Is he getting attention from it? Is he just trying to prove that he's down to earth and one of us? I don't know. I feel like it's more of a spectacle than anything. Like, I don't believe that that's genuinely just how he wants to dress just because. It's just not cute. You can slay a little better. There's lounge attire, that lounge attire that's more cute than that. That's just my opinion.
See, so if he could be a little more chic in his awfulness than
chic with the slay,
Yeah, all right. What do you think about, like, if Lauren Boebert and AOC showed up in yoga pants,
Exactly.
What if they were, like, really, really high-end yoga pants,
Even if it was Lululemon, it just doesn't give senator, y'all. I'm sorry.
I was in L.A. a couple of weeks ago, and I learned a term I did not know. Athleisure wear.
Athleisure.
That word? Everybody in Los Angeles, male and female, spends all day long in athleisure wear. In New York, we don't really do that so much, but I mean, clearly the standards are changing, but what are the rules today? I really don't know.
Well, as of now, there are no rules. And you know what? I love this story, not because I care what they wear in the Senate, but because it gave me an opportunity to make fun of our politicians. It was great. I'm going to do a little bit of a shameless plug here, but if you go on Twitter and go to #SenateDressCode, then you'll see what I did. I satirized the whole thing. I did AI images of Cory Booker wearing pink booty shorts. I did Rand Paul showing up to Capitol in a bathrobe, a red bathrobe, and people loved it. It went viral on social media. I did Mike Lee wearing colonial wear. I made fun of a lot of these senators pretending like they were showing up to the Capitol wearing this crazy stuff because of the dress code. But the reason why I did it is just to point out the absurdity of this whole thing. Yes, I mean, do people still value decorum and professionalism? Yeah, I think that there's pushback because of that. But at the same time, there are far more important issues going on. Sure. And it does speak to an underlying reality. Our Senate can get together to figure out how to remove the dress code. And now Joe Manchin, there's a bipartisan group of senators that want to reinstate it. So they're probably going to. So they can get together to fix that stuff. But when it comes to people, the problems that they're facing, they're coming up with bupkis. So this kind of just further highlights how ineffective and inefficient our government is.
Yeah.
So every culture's got dress standards, right? And, you know, some other cultures' dress standards may seem absurd to us. The white wigs of yore or current Britain, we don't live up to their standards, but we do have these tiers of formality for when something is significant, important, reverential. If you're, I don't know, pastor, we're wearing flip-flops and a t-shirt on Sunday morning. In some circles, that would be perfectly acceptable. You know, you could probably hear the rolling sound of surf outside in those cases. But in other cases, completely unacceptable. And each kind of, whether it's a mini culture or a macro culture, kind of sets these standards for itself. The Senate has this long standing tradition, and it is the place where the most revered business of politics gets done. As a guy who hates suits, who shows up every day in shorts and flips, and when I'm dressed up, I'm wearing a collared polo. Okay, that's like super high end for me.
And you should run for Senate.
Florida. Yeah. I wouldn't take a job. I would be averse to taking a job where I had to wear a suit every day because I don't enjoy it whatsoever. But I still expect my senators to wear a suit. I still expect the presidents on the debate stage to wear a suit. I still expect my House member to wear a suit when they're on the floor. If they're out doing a town hall somewhere, fine, dress however you want. But these codes exist as a way of signifying that there's something important going on here, and hoodies are not the signifier of important stuff.
But now, is it not true that those standards have been collapsing everywhere? I mean, if you go to a Broadway play in New York, I mean, there's people in flip flops and Hawaiian shirts, and you go out to almost any restaurant. Now, maybe at La Bernardin they won't let you show up in the hoodie. But I mean, listen, I know old people, and I'm not talking about myself here, but like old people who remember, people wore a suit to go on an airplane, or they put on their gloves to go down
a baseball game, for goodness sakes. Who can do that with global warming?
Yeah, I was about to bring that up, but even if you, that's before my time when people used to dress up and to go on airplanes. But even if you look at the evolution of corporate America, I mean, people used to wear nice suits and ties and things like that. And then you might have casual Friday that came along, and now every day is casual. Even the company that I worked for went from having people dress up, and then now people can wear shorts and shirts, especially if it's not customer facing. There is an evolution in the entire culture. So I do think that this whole Senate thing is probably a reflection of that, whether it's right or wrong.
Yeah. And here's my opinion. There's casual, and then there is, I'm literally threw something on with my eyes closed. I just simply put on garments so I'm not naked. There's a difference between that. So I understand like the culture shifting, us dressing a little bit more casually. We're not in a three-piece suit just to go sit at your office chair. That's all well and fine. But at the same time, I'm cool with the collared shirt. I'm cool with the collared shirt. And I also agree with you too, Jeff. Like, there are bigger fish to fry. There are much bigger fish in the Senate that they could be frying right now. And they're choosing this because it's attention grabby. It's controversial, I guess, enough to get people's attention for them to seem and pretend like they're getting something done. So I see that side of the issue, too. It's kind of like it's a bit of a conundrum. It's like, I see y'all, it's important, but is it really that important? No. But while we're on the topic, let's say that you do look a little bit of a mess and you could try a little bit better.
Just one more time. I'll try for formality.
Go ahead, Mr. Hypocrite, sitting there in your couch.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. But I mean, look, last night or the night before, I went to the Chamber Gala Awards thing and I was a presenter of an award and I wore a suit. Quite against every desire of my heart, I wore a suit because that's what the event required. That was, you know, the appropriate attire. Look, we have, for example, you know, speech. They might be soft requirements, but you're kind of expected not to swear when you're presenting on the floor of the Senate, not to engage in crass conversation. Why? Because there's a concept of respectability and restraint and decorum and civility, and every little notch away from honoring those standards we take might well be a reflection of the culture, might well be a reflection of the social media environment that we live in, but it's not good. It's not making us better, smarter, more efficient, productive, or honestly, more serious about the business of whatever it is we're doing. It's a relaxed, I don't give a bleep about whatever it is we're doing. And, you know, we kind of put up with it. We say it's color when Trump does it or whatever. It's, you know, when somebody swears a little bit, it's kind of okay, maybe. But I don't know, the pearl clutching gasp at outbursts during the State of the Union address, I think are actually well-founded. There's a reason we have these rules of propriety, and they make sense, and they kind of, they might not seem like that important, but they do kind of hold a culture together.
Yeah, and I agree with that. Like, imagine you're going on a date. It's Valentine's Day. This is a true story, by the way. And you put on your beautiful dress, you know, you got your heels on, and your boyfriend shows up in sweats and hoodies. It just reads, I don't care about being here. And so I think that's a true story, happened years ago. I don't care about being here. And I guess that's really why people are kind of offended by his attire, because I hear what you're saying. It's like, act like you care. And to your point, Jeff, they not doing a good job. Otherwise, it's showing that they care. Honestly, putting on some cute clothes is the least you could do, if we're being honest. So, you know, they're not helping themselves out by trying to say, oh, you know, times have changed. We're advancing. You're not advancing any legislation in the Senate, though.
Yeah, but so, I mean,
if the job, you can dress, I mean, down.
If they're going to trash, if they're going to trash society and trash the country, then they might as well look good while they're doing it, right? I mean,
Fetterman
went into a closed door meeting with Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, wearing like a regular, like, it did have a collar on it, but he was wearing shorts. And I'm just cracking up. I'm like, our government is a huge joke.
It is.
We are not serious people.
I think in Fetterman's case, right, it's kind of his uniform, right? In the same way that, Batman dresses in a certain way, and, Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels, wears a red beret. This is this guy's, this is like his uniform. To me, the deeper question is, and actually there is a deeper question here, I think, beyond our irritation with the Senate, which is certainly well-founded. But I mean, do we lose something? I mean, is the world changing because people dress in a more casual or sloppy fashion? I mean, does it? I have a friend, by the way, who's an executive in the PR business. If he's working at home, he does something that I never do. He says he doesn't feel right working at home unless he has a tie on. Now, every one of us is dressed like a bum, except Imani looks kind of sharp. But the three guys here are dragging down the average. Let's be honest. So I guess where I am is I kind of love the days of dressing up and all. But you know what? I don't really feel like doing it very often.
I feel like you got to feel like doing something. You know, that's going to be my overall takeaway with the John Fetterman situation, because yes, it could be his uniform, but you ain't did much else, girl. You got us all real excited about you when you was running as a progressive and you was supposed to come here and do all this stuff. And all we know you for is this hoodie.
Just misgendered John Fetterman. Do you just call him a girl?
You know, that's just my
You're
lady.
Getting canceled again, Imani. That, you know, every episode is something that gets you canceled.
So one of the things I'm going to argue for the other side just a little bit for a second. When I go church shopping, and I go visit a lot of churches, or at least I used to go visit a lot of churches, and one of the things I would do on purpose is I would dress very casual, because that's how I like to go to church. Okay, so I'm wearing flip flops again, my standard outfit. Okay, a t-shirt, flip flops, and shorts. Now this is in Arizona, and this is in Florida. Maybe it's a little bit more forgivable, but still. And I did it on purpose because I knew that if that got me side eye, and if people weren't receptive to me wearing that kind of attire, they probably weren't going to be super receptive to people who weren't Christians who were coming in the door. And I wanted to find out what was the culture like in that church in terms of towards outsiders. So I would actually use that as a little bit of a, maybe it's an unfair test, but I use it as a test to see. And for the most part, nobody really cared. But that was kind of my prod, so to speak, to find out, you know, what were they going to do with me? Now, that's different than showing up to work at the Senate, clearly. But I think you use attire on purpose, and it signifies something. And sometimes you use it to find something out about people, too, I think.
So can you guys help me with one personal thing on this? So I'm comfortable in a suit, right? I have to wear a suit when I go on television, and I wore a suit a lot when I was younger. So I'm fine in that. And I'm perfectly comfortable in jeans and a t-shirt, or yes, even a hoodie. The thing that I don't know what to do is that business casual deal. You know, I don't want to wear some golf outfit, you know, or chinos and a butt. I've yet to find, maybe that athleisure wear is an answer, but you got any tips for me on that?
Zara. No. Zara is your friend.
What is Zara?
Did you say what is Zara?
Yeah, what is Zara?
I've never heard of
that. Oh my God. Oh, y'all.
We're 0-3 over here, Imani.
Zara, see, y'all aren't fashionistas. Y'all got to know.
That news?
Chelsea.
Zara has all the best outfits, and they got the casual, the athleisure, the dress up. They have everything. It's, oh my God. My heart just broke a little.
Is it expensive though?
It's not expensive. It's like medium. It's like above H&M, but like it's not Nordstrom yet. It's like right in the middle. Yeah, it's the best place ever. Wow. Now y'all all got to go to Zara this weekend.
Thank you. I don't think any of my male counterparts here have one bit of advice to offer.
No, nothing. I got nothing for you, man.
Which
again, makes us all perfect candidates for the Senate. We should all run.
Right. That's our brand. Do you think, is this something the voters should decide? Like, that was my thought. This issue where, no. I don't mean like they should vote on the dress code. I mean, if Fetterman gets elected in his uniform, as you call it, and he goes to the Senate, I mean, is he obliged to the other senators, or is he obliged to his population? They elected him. They know who it was. It's not a surprise. He didn't campaign in a suit and then show up in a hoodie. You know, why can't the voters decide that they like or don't like a guy who doesn't wear a suit to the Senate? Why does the rest of the Senate have to make this decision?
Yeah, I guess they kind of are. I mean, they knew that he wore that getup. I mean, going back to what you were saying, Ellis, I mean, this is part of his brand. And I think he does it on purpose to make himself look more relatable and not so much like a senator, but more like a man of the people. I'm one of you. I mean, that was very key in the campaign between him and Dr. Oz, especially with that whole crudités disaster. John Fetterman used that to great effect. He's a guy in a hoodie and shorts who calls it a veggie plate, not crudités. So I think it works for him. And I think it could possibly work for other candidates as well.
Every single day we are adjusting to post-COVID in America, and I think this is another one. And you are all right. This is it's a work in progress for all of us.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So I thought there was a really interesting story out of Chicago, and I'll tell you in advance, I have no idea. I mean, I have some thoughts, but I'm really not sure what I think of it. And that's why I want to talk about it with you guys. Apparently in Chicago, there are, you know, food deserts, right? Which we've all heard the term. The idea is, you know, it's typically poor neighborhoods where there's nobody has been willing to come in and maintain a grocery store. And it's people who are transportation poor. They don't have cars. They have trouble getting to places at a distance. Transporting food is a cumbersome enterprise if you don't have a car, you know, all of that stuff. And it's not just that Chicago has food deserts, but they have sort of like negative food zones where there had been businesses and now they're leaving. They're fleeing those areas, whether because of crime or because of the wave of shoplifting kind of stuff that we've got, or they just can't make a profit. There's a kind of a mixture of stories if you look at the evidence. But now the new mayor of Chicago is considering, proposing, offering, studying. I'm not quite sure where we're at with this, but providing municipal grocery stores, coming in with basically government-run food distribution centers that I'm assuming would operate at cost. I don't know the details that maybe aren't so forthcoming. And it seems to be the idea that, look, people need food. It's a basic life necessity. If nobody else is willing to step up and do this, governments oversee water and electric and sewer and trash, at least sometimes. Maybe a government needs to run a grocery store. And I tell you, I'm very conflicted on this. I have a lot of thoughts, but I'm just kind of curious. Does this strike you as the completely stupidest idea ever? Or does it seem like a, I don't know, a mayor who's responsive to the needs of his impoverished citizens?
I definitely see the vision. I would like to see more about like what the details of the plan are going to be and how they go about doing this. Is there going to be like a certain criteria, like you have to make a certain amount of income to be able to shop at the stores, or like what is going to be the way that they roll this out? But food deserts is a big thing. Like it's something that people struggle with a lot. And there was a story I was seeing on Twitter, X the other day. And it was a clip of Kevin Hart, and he was just talking about how if you go into the hood or some of these, inner city neighborhoods, there's a lot of liquor stores and check cashing places, but there's not a lot of much else. So this could be a way to, you know, create a avenue for relief for a lot of people living in these areas so that they have access to real food that's like fresh vegetables and food that can keep them healthy and not a lot of McDonald's and check cashing places. I see the vision.
I mean, listen, it would be better if the market provided it, right? If somebody was in there and running a good local business and providing those services. But I mean, people got to eat, don't they? I don't know. I mean, I don't really have a conceptual problem with it. I wish it wasn't necessary, but Imani, you're right. I mean, this is a real thing for people, and the government has to step up, I think, as the helper of last resort.
Yeah, you guys might be surprised to find out that I hate this.
Market,
I
think it's market, right?
Yeah, market. But here's the thing. The issue is crime. Like I wrote an article about this a few weeks ago. And so I looked into this, and in the areas where they want to do this, it's very high crime. In the month of June, over a week period, there were 27 smash and grab robberies. Crime is rampant. If you put in Chicago and smash and grab in Google, you'll find a lot of different results. And here's my thing. If you're a small business owner, you're not going to set up shop in a place where you're going to get robbed. I mean, if the government needs to step up, they need to step up to take care of that. And they're not. And I'll put on my tinfoil hat. Ellis, you're going to love this. I'm going to put on my tinfoil hat. You know, if the government isn't doing much about violent crime or robbery and it drives businesses out, doesn't that kind of give them the opportunity to say, hey, we're the government. We can open up stores and you guys have to rely on us to get your food. Yes, I know it's a tinfoil hat theory, but even if my theory is wrong, that is what's happening here.
It seemed to me like, you know, if the government gives it, like to take your tinfoil hat scenario for a second. So if government is causing the problem that it wants to solve for whatever reason, because, you know, mayor's brother-in-law twice removed owns a grocery store and wants to run the co-op or whatever, you know, like that kind of thing. Okay, so if you create a business environment where it's running, somebody else is probably going to come in and see, oh, this can work. And they'll compete them out of business. And so I'm not so worried about that long term. I find that the idea of a government run grocery store, first glance as a conservative like you, Jeff, it drives me nuts. But the more I think about it, the more I'm thinking, well, they're not getting food right now. They have a hard time with the transportation issue, getting access to food, which compounds the problems of poverty. And look, we don't really object to government providing services that the private sector is not good at providing, like roads, or, you know, we might have electric be owned by a private company, but it's heavily regulated by the government because it provides a public service. Trash services, sometimes government, sometimes it's private. I couldn't find in me the real, like, this is why this is so wrong, other than it's just never been done that way. And I'll tell you what I got to thinking about with this is, what if the government grocery store, you know, Chicago Foods, what if Chicago Foods were the alternative to SNAP and EBT? You know, what if instead of giving you an EBT card to go out to a private place where they're making a profit and you're buying groceries from them, what if instead they just say, hey, come shop here. The food is going to be cheap. We're not going to stock the kinds of crud that we want people not to be eating in the first place so much. And, you know, you have an account here and this is where you can get your food. It almost seems like a better solution than the government funding the SNAP and EBT kind of, you know, go out and spend it somewhere else wherever you can find it idea. I don't know. It seemed like we're already delivering food to people indirectly through the market. What if they just delivered it directly like this?
Hmm. And can I stand up, Jeff, for bureaucrats for a second? I mean, come on. There's no mayor in America who wants more crime. I mean, let's acknowledge that. I mean, the things that cause crime are complicated. They're, you know, the pendulum swings back and forth, and some things work and some things don't work, and it gets better and it gets worse. It isn't true, by the way, that today is some rampant worst ever crime situation. The crime has ticked up a little bit since COVID, but it's dramatically less than it was in the 80s and the 90s and in the lifetimes of many living Americans. And again, I'm not defending any of it. I wish we had zero crime, but I promise you, who agrees with me on that are police officials and government officials in cities, towns, and states across America. None of those people want more crime, I promise.
The thing is, and you're right, crime has gone down, but the thing is, it's still bad enough to where these business owners left. These business owners packed up and moved because of the crime. I mean, there may have been other reasons too, but crime was the main thing. Walmart, Target, all these big box stores have been closing stores in certain cities because of the crime, and they can more easily afford to deal with this theft. A small business owner can't. So if you have a grocery store in that area, yeah, you're going to pack up and move because you will go out of business. It's not like it's not like you're in a state where they, you know, are good at letting people defend themselves and defend their property. So to me, having government run stores is just a band-aid. It doesn't get to the root of the problem. The issue is that people can't conduct their business operations successfully because of this rampant crime. I mean, like I said, 27 smash and grab robberies just in a week period in June. That's insane.
Well, just again, but before I get off of this, there's a whole lot of reasons retail is in trouble, and some smash and grab robbery may be one of them. But retail is screwed. I mean, people don't go to stores anymore. I mean, they buy stuff online. They go to Amazon. I mean, I wouldn't open a store today. That's a rough business under
But like Target isn't closing stores in affluent areas. They're closing stores in areas where these things are happening. So, I mean, again, if these gigantic corporations are in areas where they can't handle it and they have to close up stores, that tells you that there's a problem. People are still going to the store in more middle class, suburban, upper scale areas. But when it comes to areas where there's a lot of crime, it is an issue. And yes, I understand that there's other problems here, but it's too much to where we can't just ignore it and just say, OK, yeah, let the government take care of it. No, the government should be taking care of the crime because that's what their role is in the first place.
I think there's so many layers to this issue. I think crime is one of them. I think the reason why certain areas have grocery stores and other ones don't, because yes, it's crime, but also a lot of these chain stores simply just don't open up in certain neighborhoods. Like, I feel like it's all a very calculated thing. Like, certain areas, they don't have a grocery store, but they'll have a Dollar General. It's like the way that they market their stores to certain areas, it has some innuendos in there, some undertones in the way that they make some of these calculations, for one. So I think there's so many layers to this problem, but could providing this grocery store alleviate some of that? Yes, but I see what y'all are saying. There's still, it doesn't really get to the root of the problem. And that's a problem with corporations as a whole too, because can we just force Walmarts and Targets and Kroger and HEB, can we force them to open stores in certain areas? Can that be mandated by the mayor? Can that be mandated by the governor of these states? Like, do we necessarily need the government to fill this space? Is it necessary that they provide an alternative or option? Yes, but at the same time, is there a way that we can incentivize other corporations or businesses to open in these areas where there are deserts? Like, how do we go about correcting that issue? Because I think that's the main thing. They're just simply not opening these stores in certain areas.
And they're fleeing. I mean, even where they existed, one of the stories I was looking at was talking about the various stores that were in operation in some of the food desert-esque kind of places that they've just left because of shoplifting issues or because of non-profitability, which can be tied to a variety of factors. But, you know, they either aren't investing, or they're actively fleeing those areas. And look, I'm so with you, Jeff, on all the problems, right? Like, for example, look at school lunch programs. And, you know, under the Michelle Obama concept of providing all the healthy food, what you wound up with was garbage pails full of food that kids didn't want to eat, but they had to take because the lunch lady was responsible for giving you food that you didn't want. So I don't know how much optimism I have for a government run food store stocking effectively, pricing effectively, serve. I have lots of concerns, but my sort of bare bones boil the issue down to its essence is for me that if poor people living in areas that nobody really wants to live in But that's all that's what they've got. And they don't have access to food, a basic necessity. The government run store is a terrible option, but it's better than no option. And so I weirdly, as anti-government, everything, I'm totally with you on all of that, Jeff. There's something about this that strikes me as it's worth a try.
I mean, if I had to choose between them not having food and then having food with the government that I hate, fine. I want people to eat. I don't want people to die. But my fear with this is that it's not just that I disagree with this on a philosophical level. My fear is that they'll open up these stores and then, you know, they'll be okay. And then they'll say, okay, now the problem solved. People have food, but they don't actually take care of the underlying issues that actually drove those businesses out in the first place. And I know it's not just crime. I think that's one of the main issues. But Ellis and everybody else, you're right. I mean, there are other issues that lead to these stores running out, or there's a reason why they don't want to open stores in those areas. I think that we have a Band-Aid solution here that's not mm-hmm. going to take those underlying issues. Therefore, what's going to happen is that these problems with poverty in these areas are going to persist because the government is very good at making people feel good. Oh, we got you stores. Problem solved. Well, no, there's still issues going on that you're not addressing.
Yeah, that's
and there's a lot of Band-Aid solutions floating around everywhere. I feel like even when we were talking about like, oh, just no guns anymore, like everybody just tries to do these Band-Aid solutions everywhere. And it's like, get to the meat of the issue, like be a detective. Ain't y'all supposed to investigate stuff? Isn't that what Congress does? Don't y'all like do inquiries and all of that? Like,
only on political opponents.
You know what the alternative is, right? Is you know, you take the kids to Burger King. You know, and so they eat bad, they're unhealthy. We pay for it eventually in healthcare costs.
Yep.
And I don't know. Listen, if you guys can figure out how to make kids eat healthy food, please let me know. I don't know the answer to that.
They got
to
market it better. If I knew that Brussels sprouts were delicious, if you add bacon in them when I was a child, I would have been eating Brussels sprouts. You know, nobody told me.
Yeah, I'm completely sure that, you know, the Chicago Foods is going to be throwing stuff out left and right because they think, well, look, if we provide people with zucchini and, you know, good quality carrots and healthy chicken, you know, fake chicken or whatever, then they'll eat that and then they won't. And, you know, market forces do a lot. And one of the key things about a market solution, it's going to be responsive to the customer. I don't have great optimism that anything the city of Chicago, to Jeff's point, runs, since they can't run the basics properly. And this comes from a kid who grew up in the vicinity. I don't think they're going to run a food store properly either. But I just keep coming back to the, you know, it is a Band-Aid solution, no doubt. And it does take the pressure off of solving for the contributory causes. But again, you know, if people are hungry, I want people to eat. And what's the next alternative other than do nothing is what? Hope the churches come in and deliver food, or, you know, set up weekly donation stations, which is also government delivery of food. It just seemed like some kind of nexus between the EBT, the food desert, maybe government in an at-cost basis, even if it's temporary, could be a mechanism for making things better. Though I hate to imagine what could go wrong beyond what we've even considered.